You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, March 7th, 2023. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Biden calls for new taxes kicking in at $400,000 to fund Medicare. Also on the program today, the DOJ to file suit. It will block the JetBlue takeover of Spirit Air. Meanwhile, today in Oklahoma, a vote to legalize weed. Moody's releases a report on the implications of the debt ceiling default. Not rosy. Protests continue at Atlanta's proposed cop city. In Israel, protests grow to the military. This question of so-called judicial reform. Meanwhile, the UN completes a framework for a major treaty to protect the oceans. Florida legislature and Ron DeSantis look to protect insurance companies from citizens with their so-called tort reform. Labor unions shut down France over Macron's attack on its retirement program. And despite a drop in border crossings, Biden administration considering reviving migrant detentions. The Biden administration on the verge of a decision on the Willow Project, which could generate 2 million cars worth of carbon pollution. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, everyone. It is Tuesday, March 7th, as I said. Tuesday, Emma, what do we call it?
Newsday Tuesday.
I also refer to this. Let me widen out here a little bit. This also is my son's birthday.
Oh, happy birthday, Saul.
So this goes out to Saul. Saul. Definitely know his name. He is 10 years old today.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. People have been listening. You know, I could say this with when Myla's birthday, people who are listening to the original iteration of this program will remember when Myla was born. But for those who have listened only to this program, now in its this iteration, now in its 13th year. I'm going to be celebrating a 13th anniversary in, I don't know, sometime in November or October of this program, of this iteration. We will probably blow right through that.
I thought it was April.
April 1st is the birthday for the Majority Report, which started on Air America in 2004. So that would be 19. Oh, Jesus.
What?
19 years.
19 years. Wow.
God, am I old.
Can almost drink.
Yeah. the past week and a half has been, or really the past week has been basically Saul saying, asking for an extra dessert or an extra cookie or this and that, because it's the last time he will be in single digits on a specific, on a Tuesday.
Hmm.
And celebrating that by asking for a cookie or if he could stay up later or watch a second movie or
something. What's his birthday gift kind of that he's been asking for?
I got Saul, and he's seen this one already. I got him two gifts. One was he wanted a gaming chair.
Okay.
Now, he doesn't really game. I mean, he has a computer and he plays some very rudimentary games. I won't give him like a console yet or anything like that. I'm trying to keep, yeah, I made a mistake with child number one in terms of devices. I'm not going to do it again with child number two, but he wanted a gaming chair and his desk is in our kitchen.
Yeah.
Because we don't have like, he and I sort of share a room.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot of, room in there. And, we're roomies, more or less. And now in my kitchen, there is this massive gaming chair that it wasn't like, you know, one of the sort of really hoity-toity, but he loves it because the back goes back.
Oh,
he can
yeah.
actually like, and so he loves that gaming chair. And then I got him something else, which unfortunately he doesn't listen to the show, so I can tell. I got him a lockpick set.
Oh.
With an acrylic a lock, so you can actually see what you're doing in there.
Is he into some like Oliver Twist kind of stuff right now?
He saw Oliver Twist, and so he's constantly pickpocketing me. And but the lock picking thing, it could be a problem because he could end up being a criminal.
Yeah.
Or a gamer.
Could be both.
All right. Let's get into this, folks. We got a lot to cover today. In France. And it's interesting because today the Biden administration unveiled its plan to shore up Medicare, which the trust fund is slated to run out of money essentially in 2028. Now, to be clear, again, people pay into Medicare and it kicks back a certain amount. The trust fund was established both for Social Security and Medicare in the early 80s. With an anticipation that the boomers would be aging into Medicare and Social Security, and there would need to be a sort of expanded fund for them. And because of primarily because of wealth inequality, those funds are not as robust as was anticipated. 91% of the country's income was touched by the Social Security and Medicare payroll tax back in the day. Now it's down into the mid to lower 80s. And so that's a big deficit. Biden has proposed to shore that up. We'll talk about that in a moment. But and we saw the implications of Biden at the State of the Union in terms of like questioning the Republicans about Social Security. Well, in France, they take their social retirement funds pretty seriously, obviously. And this came up yesterday with Paxton. France spends its government owns more
of the public sector.
Of the public sector, or I should say the private sector, or what would be the private sector,
yeah.
than Venezuela, than most countries. Yeah. Let's put it that way. And so France is a place where they understand that when you evolve, the value, as humans evolve and societies evolve, the value should be returned to the vast majority of people in the form of a better life. And that means we don't work as late into our lives. And their retirement starts at 62. Macron has been hinting at he wants to raise the retirement age. Well, the unions have basically shut down France for the day. And
it's
here's
been weeks of this, too.
Here's some footage of that. Not the most kinetic of groups of people, but at this point, but certainly a lot of them. And they have shut down things like subways and railways and all sorts of mechanisms. The country's more or less at a standstill.
That was in Grenoble, France, in the southeast. Very beautiful. That mountain in the background. I've never seen that.
And where's this?
This is in Paris.
Okay, and here's Paris. And really, the thing that people are looking out for is unions are out there. How much will there be student protests as well? Because on some level, you know, France is used to these type of protests, and it's unclear what the how the Macron government's going to respond.
But 81% I saw today under 35 are against this. That's a staggering.
And we'll see how adamant they become. But here is Paris. Just as far as the eye can see.
Wow.
So it remains to be seen, but there's a lesson here, folks, that this type of stuff scares these administrations and generally end up, preventing things like essentially turning the clock back on the development of society.
Yeah, I feel like Macron was always kind of, even from the onset, looking to do stuff like this. And he'd be a long ways farther along if it wasn't for their culture of resistance.
And there's a left in, like, I know that Mélenchon's party is not obviously in power, but their counter to this was let's lower the retirement age to 60. And I think that is something that, like, the elected more leftist representatives in the United States could glean from this as well.
Lulu Otto on the IM says, why do you think France has a much more active protest culture as compared to the U.S.? I don't know what the fundamental reason, but if you compare, let's say, the American Revolution and the French Revolution happening more or less at the same time, the French Revolution was internal, right? I mean, the American Revolution was
more urban too.
It was more urban. The American Revolution was really, an attempt to decolonize themselves as they were colonizing.
But become the colonizers right. themselves.
Yes. But the relationship between, who they were revolting from was at a distance.
Yeah.
The French Revolution was, in and of itself, literally a revolution in terms of the system of government there. Mm-hmm. And I don't, maybe it's just age. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it goes like, there's also the 1848 stuff. Like, France literally widened their streets to deal with people barricading them throughout history. So, like, it's a longstanding, culture there that's been built up over centuries.
And labor militancy, right? I mean, that's what Cole Stangler was talking about when we had him on about this. The labor unions are the muscle behind the protest movement.
Yes. And they're obviously the labor movement's far stronger, really, in most places than in this country.
And also, there's much more solidarity about this particular retirement program because, unlike in the United States, where a lot of our pensions or 401ks are through private industry, are privatized, this is really the bulk of what is French people's retirement.
And we should say, the experiment to introduce the 401k, which came in the 80s, has been a failed experiment by really any measure. Mm-hmm. If the idea with the 401k was to give older Americans a better retirement, and by older Americans, I'm talking the majority of older Americans, 401ks are either not available to a huge cohort of American workers, and then B, woefully underfunded. And the problem is that with this experiment is that we have sort of relied on 401ks to be supplemental as opposed to having it all done through Social Security. And it has left people in their retirements wanting. And when that happens too, it inhibits the ability of younger people to grow their wealth because they're having to take care of their parents more. So that's where we're at. We'll get to this Medicare stuff in just a minute, because and it remains to be seen what the proposal, if there's going to be one in terms of Social Security. There may not in the Biden budget, but we'll see. But they really should, it seems to me, take the offensive on that.
Mm-hmm.
But first, a couple words from our sponsors. This was actually funny. Right before the show, I got a phone call from it was like an electronic voice, like, hello, press one to check your order. And I press it, and a guy gets on, and I can't quite tell where he was from, but he did not have an American accent, let's put it that way. And he claimed he was from Amazon and wanted to see if I needed to cancel an order that I had,
mm-hmm.
which was a fake order. I didn't order anything from Amazon. And I figured he's faking me out. I'm going to fake him out. And 20 minutes later, he was getting a little agitated. And we videotaped that. We'll put it up.
Yeah, I walk into the office and Bradley's standing there with his phone filming Sam on the phone.
I'm going, wait, are you saying I ordered airports? Like an entire airport? Anyways, the point is he wanted my banking information. And my name and my address and my banking information, because scammers and hackers do this. Now, of course, I gave him John Benjamin's information, and that's for John to deal with. But for me, I'm protected. both my identity and my online presence is protected. And why? Because I use Aura. What is Aura? Well, they are a sponsor of today's program. And it's an easy-to-use app that includes everything you need to stay safe online. So if you have a friend or a relative who, when they get these type of calls, uses all your information, well, Aura is going to help you. Why? Because it protects from scammers and hackers. It trolls, essentially, the dark web, where scammers and hackers trade and sell your information that they have gotten through leaks or phishing projects or whatever it is. Your emails, your passwords, your social security numbers, and it lets you know fast if it finds anything. It also sends takedown notices to those websites that put up your public information, reducing your robocalls and your scam calls. It also gives you near real-time alerts on suspicious credit inquiries. So if someone's trying to set up a credit card in your name or take out a loan, God forbid, in your name, it will let you know. I've had that happen to me, but it was actually me and my daughter setting up an account for her, but it was good to know that they're on top of it. They've got a VPN that allows you to stay anonymous online by keeping your browsing history and personal information safe and encrypted. They protect your devices from viruses, malware, spyware, so that the bad guys can't break in through that way. They even help you manage your kids' online activity. You can restrict their devices by restricting their specific apps or setting screen time limits or saying you got to do focus time at this time instead of watching YouTube. They got a password manager that lets you store and access your online passwords securely and conveniently. And you might have an app that does one of these things or two of these things. Well, here's an app that does all seven. Let Aura do the hard work of keeping you safe online. If you sign up right now, Aura will give you a 2-week free trial with my link, aura.com/majority. You're going to be shocked at how much of your private information Aura finds exposed over those 2 weeks. Go to aura.com, aura.com/majority. Start your free trial. Link, of course, in the podcast and YouTube description. Also, every day, when I do this show, this is another sponsor message, every single day, I have at least one bottle of water that is been that is got liquid liquid
infused.
IV infused. I don't know, what would you call that? It is a it's a powder that essentially multiplies your hydration. Now they also have ones like this one. I'm stuck on my tangerine with my immunity protection. I'm going to ride that thing all the way through spring so I don't get sick, and then I'll probably go back to my matcha, which gives me a little bit of like energy. But there's other flavors too. They got watermelon. They got they've got tons of flavors. I can't even go through.
Acai, lemon, lime,
guava, passion fruit, strawberry, tropical punch, pina colada, which is also I have like a weird affinity for pina colada. But the point is, in one stick, you get five essential vitamins and two times faster hydration than water alone. You can use it during your podcast. You can use it before, during, and after a workout. Or I find like when I take flights, I'll also take a couple sticks with me on traveling. Helps with you know, getting dehydrated on a plane. Helps with jet lag after a long night out. All of it. To date, Liquid IV has donated over 36 million servings in 50 countries around the world to help hydrate people. It's got, like I say, five essential vitamins, premium ingredients, three times the electrolytes of traditional sports drinks. You can grab your Liquid IV in bulk nationwide at Costco, or you can get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com. Use the code MAJORITYREP at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using the promo code MAJORITYREP, not Majority Report, MAJORITYREP at liquidiv.com. Check it out. Okay, let's go into Biden's
budget
release. Not so much of the budget yet, but of this one particular element of it, which is how they're going to be dealing with Medicare. And it is, you can see this press release that we got up. President's budget, extending Medicare solvency by 25 years or more, strengthening Medicare and lowering health care costs. There's three major features of this. The biggest one is, which, you know, will extend it at least 25 years. And that would be to increase the Medicare tax rate on people who are earning $400,000 or more. Now, again, we have progressive taxation in this country. And so let me be explicit with this. I mean, I don't really even care if it was raised for people under $400,000, but or applied to the first $400,000, but it's not. If you make more than $400,000, any dollar made above $400,000, there'll be an increase in your taxes by 1.2%.
Whoa.
So if you make $500,000,
mm-hmm.
you get taxed, like everybody, at 3.8%. Or at least above a certain threshold, 3.8% on the first 400,000, and then on that next 100,000 you make, hold on to your hat, it's going to be $1,200.
Wow,
that's going to hit you hard in the pocket.
So you probably create less jobs, you know.
You're going to probably go out and create less jobs for like your, you know, there's going to be. I don't know. That sounds like basically a couple hours less babysitter time that you're going to get. I mean, I don't know what people are paying for babysitter. I'm paying like $20-25 an hour.
And lots of less innovation that we won't be able to even calculate.
That's right. So all those fur sinks that would have been shipped, those aren't going to happen. So this is like an incredibly moderate increase to our taxes. And won't hit the vast majority of Americans. I don't know. $400,000, I think, puts you in like the top 5th percentile mm-hmm. of earners. Maybe even higher. Or I should say lower. And this is a very moderate increase. But will save Medicare until, well, I'll be gone.
2050. At least they said.
Well, I won't necessarily.
No, you'll still be.
No, yeah. I'll still be around. I'll still be around. No, I'm lasting until like 2070, I think was my plan.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
That's because I mean, that Medicare will be still
exactly.
kicking in.
So that's important. And there are, there is other things that, I mean, a little more loopholes existing in Medicare taxes, essentially, so that, it's harder for high-income people to shield that themselves from that 3.8% of Medicare. I just can't believe people do that. I honestly can't believe.
What, be smart? Their money? It's called finances. Look it up.
There's a way of doing it, apparently, where business owners somehow ensure that their income is neither earned nor considered investment capital gains. I don't know how that happens. But the budget would ensure that the Medicare taxes apply to incomes over $400,000 a year without the loopholes. It will also credit savings from prescription drug reforms to the HI trust fund. That's the Medicare fund. And essentially making sure that any savings that came from the Inflation Reduction Act on price negotiations will be dedicated to shoring up health insurance funds. It will also lower out-of-pocket costs for drugs subject to negotiation. $2 cost shave is sharing for generic drugs on chronic conditions. More basically Medicare stuff, drug prices going down. And also there will be no cost sharing for three mental health or other behavioral health visits per year.
And they calculate that into the drug prices kind of going down into the savings for Medicare as well.
Yep. Good stuff, not necessarily anything that's going to pass per se, but the point is to educate people and to make it clear when Republicans start saying we need to cut Medicare, we need to raise the age of retirement for Medicare so that people aren't eligible to it. Understand what they're doing is we need to put the onus on individuals and force them to work longer so that they can get health care. And that has the added benefit from the perspective of the capitalist class that, like, it's going to, you have more old people in the job force. Mm-hmm. That means there's going to be less pressure on wages because there's going to be more people competing for the same amount of jobs. And understand, this makes it clear there is a very easy fix for Medicare. Very easy fix. $1,200 extra if you make $500,000 a year. If you make $600,000 a year, $2,400 extra. If you make $700,000, I can keep doing this because the math is super simple, $3,600. $700,000 a year, and you're going to be worried about $3,600. If you're making $700,000 a year, you're having dinner at least once or twice a year. That's going to cost you $1,200. I don't know about that, but maybe. So very reasonable, and it understand like the implications of these small changes, which seem small, and they are. I mean, let's be clear. They're small, but you're talking about the difference between providing health care for millions upon millions of Americans for 2 or 3 years when they can retire earlier. And how many years do you have left at age 62? If you're making in the bottom 50% of the income distribution, actuarially speaking, not many. And why shouldn't those years be more enjoyable? Like, what's the point of society if you cannot enjoy your life more at the end of your life?
Well, for the people pushing against it, it's to make them more money.
Exactly. David Dayen has an interesting piece. Again, small bore stuff, but it impacts and mitigates sort of suffering and difficulty for millions upon people, millions of people. And we also have an example of the absolute opposite that you'll talk about in a second, Emma. But four major pieces of legislation passed during the Biden administration, probably no more major legislation. The bipartisan infrastructure law, CHIPS, which was the semiconductor industrial policy stuff, The Inflation Reduction Act, also more essentially industrial policy stuff. You know, all good to some varying degree, some better than others. On balance, good. There was also the $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan. There was a lot of great stuff in there, stuff that reduced child poverty by upwards like a third to 40%. Stuff that essentially we have let as a country expire. And we'll talk more about that in a moment. Not the least of which is SNAP. But there was a lot of temporary programs, great programs. Provided free health insurance if you lost your job and would pay for COBRA. Not the most efficient way to provide this. It was done largely because folks like Nancy Pelosi did not want people to get a taste of Medicare, did not want to reduce the Medicare rolls. He could have expanded Medicare. But nevertheless, good things, a lot of which have expired. However, there was a couple of things in there that changed that I doubt we ever even mentioned because it was too wonky and it's not shiny. It's not clear on how it helps, but it's easier to see in retrospect. And David Dayen, of course, also is very smart about this stuff. Yesterday, he announced that North Carolina struck a deal with between the Republicans in the House and the, you know, the legislature, Republican-led legislature, and a Democratic governor to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. It will cover at least 600,000 people who did not have health insurance. It will cost nothing for the state to do so. It's just that the Republicans hate to expand this. And here is how it was, you know, the ACA basically set up this Medicaid expansion. Federal government pay for 90% of it. State has to pick up 10%. However, North Carolina came together. They decided to raise a tax on hospitals to cover that remaining 10%. The hospitals, it's a wash for because they're already spending $1 billion on uncompensated care for uninsured people. So now they're going to be getting
because their
fees.
State hadn't expanded.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it's a wash for the hospitals. Administratively, it probably saves them money. Just like in the same dynamic that Medicare for All would actually save all of us as individuals money, even though our taxes would go up, because we're not going to be paying future or current outrageous medical costs. But here's the thing. The American Rescue Plan created an open-ended signing bonus if you got onto the Medicaid rolls. And it's going to mean for North Carolina an extra $1.8 billion. So we basically bribed North Carolina to take Medicaid, to expand their Medicaid rolls. And they took it. Something I can't ever imagine that we mentioned in the American Rescue Plan when it passed.
No.
An open-ended signing bonus for Medicaid. But you're talking about 600,000 people getting health insurance.
It also helps that North Carolina now has a Democratic governor.
Without a doubt.
But still, I mean, that was one of the final holdouts. What are there, 11 left after North Carolina?
There are 11 left. Meanwhile, Oklahoma and Missouri also got signing bonuses, though that they passed their expanded Medicaid through referendum. So it wasn't necessarily that the lawmakers made an active choice, but I imagine that also dampened the push against it.
Yeah.
In North Carolina, the signing bonus, writes David Dayen, explicitly changed their mind. So that was huge. Hundreds of thousands, if not millions, are going to get health care because of that. Meanwhile, the Eli Lilly dropping of their prices on insulin. A lot of people have been wondering, like, exactly what was that about?
The goodness of their hearts.
That was one thought. David Dayen writes that this was a function of a provision in the American Rescue Plan that was going to make more robust a penalty if your drugs increased in price at a rate higher than inflation. Now, undoubtedly, Eli Lilly was getting a bad of like, you know, bad publicity from this. There was a lot of pressure, et cetera, et cetera. Medicaid prevents drug companies from raising list prices above the rate of inflation. Any company that does so must pay Medicaid a rebate, which includes a 23% discount on the of the average manufacturer price and an additional rebate in the event of price spikes. These rebates, writes Dane, can be incredibly large if the price spikes are high. But since 2010, this was under the Affordable Care Act, this rebate has been capped at 100% of the cost of the average purchase price of the medication, so companies wouldn't have essentially had to pay Medicaid whenever their product is used. It basically balances itself out. Starting in 2024, the Medicaid rebates become uncapped.
Mm.
And the biggest loser in that policy change? Eli Lilly. According to a 2019 study from drug pricing analyst Sean Dixon, 38% of the reduced rebate for the entire program due to the cap, in other words, if there was no cap, 40% of what was lost because of that cap was attributable to Lilly's Humalog insulin.
Jesus.
If the rebate had been uncapped in 2017, Dickens estimated, Lilly's revenues would have fallen $1.7 billion that year. They would have had to pay Medicaid $150 per every vial used. So what did Eli Lilly do? They reduced the price by 70% to get out of the Medicaid penalty. Their price reduction won't happen until the fourth quarter of 2023, just in time for that cap change in 2024. So that's what you're getting right there with the American Rescue Plan.
But was that just a continuation, though, of the Affordable Care Act and that kind of rolling change?
It was an add-on, except for there was a cap in the way that they would calculate how much of a rebate you owed. And because the rebate was constructed in such a way that it wasn't terribly costly, the penalty, if you will, was not that costly. They've got rid of the cap on how much you could owe essentially Medicaid, and it's off to the races. So Congress added an inflation rebate for Medicare into the Inflation Reduction Act as well, but it will and it will have a similar effect. Now, drug companies figure out ways of getting around it, but this is out there, and these little tweaks make a big difference.
Yeah.
You're going to be saving millions upon millions of Americans, hundreds, if not thousands of dollars a year annually, many people on fixed incomes. And they're going to save money because of these provisions.
And if the budget suggestion actually happens of Medicare also being able to negotiate more drug prices as well, that would be beneficial too.
Without a doubt. Simultaneously, a lot of those provisions from the American Rescue Plan are sunsetting.
Yeah, March 1st, SNAP benefits and the expanded SNAP benefits for 32 states, D.C., Guam, and elsewhere. And during COVID, those enhanced emergency protections for SNAP, I mean, it's estimated they kept at least 4 million people from falling below the poverty line. And the enhanced benefits helped 31 million Americans. With this like sharp reduction, there was this big write-up in the Washington Post as well, where they interviewed people in Kentucky, I believe, just essentially saying the government's trying to kill me, because the guy who they interviewed to open the piece, he was getting a check in the hundreds, and then it's in the double digits just immediately because of that cutoff. The average recipient's going to get $90 less of SNAP benefits now that this has fallen off. Family of four.
A month.
A month, yeah. Family of four will be cut over $320 a month. And the most drastic number, this is from Alex Salmon's write-up in Slate, seniors could see their benefits drop from $281 a month to just $23 a month. What's also notable here, too, is that the Republicans have really struggled to find what they're going to hold the entire United States economy hostage over now that they have the House, when the debt ceiling fight kind of comes around the bend in June. And the only thing they seem to be able to agree on is SNAP cuts.
Right.
SNAP is a popular program when you ask people, and when it comes to polling, people want there to be some sort of safety net for the poorest Americans in the country. And this is just an example of, like, some of these things during the COVID emergency bills, like, you know, the child tax credit and expanded SNAP, those should have been made permanent. And for a variety of reasons, including people like Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema and the Biden administration's lack of willingness to really fight on some of this stuff, that's not what's happened. But child poverty reduced drastically. SNAP, these expanded benefits, reduced poverty by 10%, child poverty by 14%, according to studies. And there's, like, lobbying efforts as well by some of these grocery stores that service SNAP recipients a lot as well. So there's industry push on that side too, but the problem is just that the Republicans in particular are ideologically opposed to helping any poor people.
And we should say 18 states have already reduced those benefits. So there was two types of benefits there. There was an increase in payments and also an expansion of who was eligible. And so there's going to be people who are kicked off totally and people who are going to have these reductions. And these are basically all just policy choices. You know, we talk about earned income tax credit, the child tax credit, $300 per kid, per family on a monthly basis. And you combine that with the expansion of food stamps, you had, you know, cut child poverty by 50% approximately. And then we just decided as a country, interesting to know that we could do that if we wanted to within in the course of a year. Interesting to know that we could do that now that we know, whatever. I mean, the total lack of outrage about this is reflected in our media, as reflected by our politicians, as reflected by, you know, most people just don't think about it. Maybe they saw that stat. And then we just decided, whatever.
Manchin says that, at least with the child tax credit, the reason he didn't want it to continue is because people would use it for drugs. That was his reasoning behind that.
The sense of entitlement.
I mean, there is a certain class of power broker in Washington that enjoys a certain level of child poverty or poverty amongst the population for exploitation. That is a fact.
It's maintained. It's the whip.
It is just... People really need to internalize this. We have proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that we have the ability to reduce child poverty by about 50% over the course of a year. I mean, probably less, 6 to 8 months, 6 months. We did it. Not hard to figure out how you would sort of like double that number. And then just as a society, we decided, understand that these are all policy choices, period, end of story. They are all policy choices. And it's not even like a this or that type of choice. I don't love the idea that we're sending a ton of money to the military-industrial complex. But don't kid yourself. The reason why we're not eradicating child poverty is because we don't care. Or there may be some people who are like, it's like Matt said, it keeps wages down. It keeps wages down.
Right.
It keeps people, you know, a little bit of hunger keeps them in line.
I think that's why the Koch brothers are so, and those sorts of oligarchs have put so much money into, like, this narrative that we responded to the COVID pandemic with just an authoritarian overreach of the government, because there are certain things like this that we did, and Adam Tooze covers all this stuff too, the intervention in the economy that actually, like, proved these things that we're talking about, that we can just change this stuff.
Everything we talk about too is you start to realize it's all about setting a precedent. They're not fighting against a specific policy per se. They are fighting against the idea that we can actually, that these things don't have to exist. Mm-hmm. They're fighting against the idea that the American public would realize, like, we're just making a choice. These are all political choices. There is no economy. There is only a political economy. There is no economy that exists in nature. There is only the economy that we decide to make. And they don't want people to understand that. Also, and it's not just like a Koch brother. Do you have that Nate Silver tweet? That was a perfect example. Do you have that tweet? I sent that in the chat. It's the perfect example of how, like, they deploy and folks like the data guys, how they
sort of centrist guys.
Yeah. I think Atreos had it actually at one point. Maybe he didn't. I can't remember where. Right, well, I think I saw it. But the point is,
yeah,
he wrote, there was some guy on Substack, of course, who wrote something to the effect of, like, the authority. Yeah. Okay. Yes. And do you have his tweet on that?
I'll find the tweet.
Yeah. Let's find the tweet, because he is commenting on this piece written in September. Santa Clara churches were still prohibited. This is 2020, from indoor gatherings. Yet by contrast, shopping malls could operate at 50% capacity. By October 14th, when the county churches were allowed the lesser of 100 people or 25% capacity, museums could run at 50%. Stores had no capacity limits on them at all. Much of Santa Clara's restrictions early on were tied to state requirements, which were harsher on churches than stores. Now, Nate Silver, the data guy, is out there saying, like, oh, well, this is a clear indication of, like, of the type of person who is writing this. In fact, I think he even says,
I have it here,
there's no epidemiological reason in which why this existed. It's sort of stunning in the sense that Nate Silver, here it is. It's kind of crazy and tells you a lot about who was writing the restrictions, right? This is the narrative. Those smug secularists. That churches in some jurisdictions were subject to more restrictions than museums! Exclamation point. Not even attempting to follow any sort of epidemiological principles. What are the statistic odds that Nate Silver has never been into a church and never been into a museum, and never been into a shopping mall? Because my experience in all three of those places, and to be fair, I don't go into churches too often, is that when you're in church, or in synagogue for that matter, you're sitting in one place. There's usually somebody, if people like the rabbi or the priest or the pastor, whose shoulder can touch yours in the pew, and you're sitting there for an hour or 2 hours or 2.5 hours. Nobody's moving around. And you know what else they're doing? They're singing. They're singing right in your face. Or they're praying out loud right in your face. Now, at a museum, generally, people sometimes stop, look at a painting to take it all in, but you're moving around. You're standing. The ceilings are much higher.
It's also a little untoward to be singing loudly in a museum.
They tell you not to sing so much. 50% capacity in a museum. This is a pretty nice experience, actually, because you're not running into many people.
I also love his...
You also have the ability to step aside from them. Same with a mall. You're moving around. I mean, How do you say there's no, doesn't attempting to follow any sort of epidemiological principles? Close proximity, no huge, exalting of air from your body.
Also, like, people go to church are old. That's another thing. Like that, they're more, tighter packed and they're older. I would imagine. I mean, people.
And we had a lot of examples early on of like mass infections in a church. But the point being, Nate Silver's, you know, sort of like a part of this sort of libertarian.
But we know this. Like, I mean, it's the same way like FTX was reading these guys. They know who their big readers are.
Yeah.
I mean, but who is he trying to say that tells you a lot about who was writing the restrictions? I mean, I'm Nate Silver.
Non-religious people.
I understand. It's like the look at these smug liberals.
Hoity-toity elite.
But left-wing. Nate Silver came out of the New York Times. The readers.
Nate Silver came out of Daily Kos.
I mean, give me a break.
He was Poblano.
Him and Matt Iglesias really remind me of, you know, middle of the country, normal type of guys.
Yeah, totally in touch with the heartland. Like, I don't even know who he's trying to appeal to here, but I guess I do, right?
Yeah,
like, let's not
oligarchs.
Pretend
it's
who you are.
It's like the Joe Rogan businessmen type of guys who think that really changed my mind about universal basic income because people need an incentive to work. That's the class of people this is speaking to.
With the trappings of, you know, I'm going to attack liberal elitism.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. All right.
Oh, and I just want to say quickly about the SNAP thing. Next time Republicans talk about how hard it is to get a gallon of milk in this country right now and what the prices are, know that they are ideologically opposed to any kind of government program that prevents people from getting hungry or starving. They pretend like they're trying to combat inflation, and that's because they really care about every worker and their inability to buy a carton of eggs when they're ideologically in line with letting you starve. The obsession with inflation is really just about the investor class and things like debt becoming a little bit less valuable for holders that they represent.
Kowalski said a very cruel read I had on why they want to cut back on the SNAP program so much is that it will decrease the demand for food and bring prices down. Let that sink in for a moment. We will starve the poorest among us to get the cost of food down.
Jeez.
Very possible. Well, we started the show by saying we're going to do a short Tuesday, and we managed not to do that. So,
I don't even know why you tell me that, because it never happened. It's never happened once. Not once.
I used to be better about it. Michael would just like scour, like glare at me.
You might get that call.
Wrap it up.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get a libertarian call now at 12:35 or 2:35.
Folks, 646-257-3920 is the number. It is. Yes. And let me just say this. Lin-Manuel Marguera said, it's fascinating to look at how the tweets of people that leave 538 change once they're no longer working under Nate. Silver's just math, Tim Pool. Yes. But you know what else is also funny about this? Go in and read the replies. It is unbelievable. There's one guy who agrees with Nate Silver, and that's the guy whose Substack Silver quoted. And then Nate Silver replies back to him like, yeah, you got it. And then it's like almost every single tweet after that is somebody basically saying, are you serious? Are you not aware of how churches work or malls work or any of these places? It really is impressive. It really is awesome. All right, folks. Just a reminder, it's yours.
What do you do with this information? Whether or not it's true is not what matters. Though it does play a role.
Manual drop. Nice.
There we go. That one required the phone coming out.
I thought that was the voice of God, and I was severely disappointed.
There's a new app. He's got the drop app.
Kanye will be looking at someone that saved the Jews.
Oh, boy. All right.
Drops on the go now.
There you go. That must be really appreciated at home.
Yeah, I'm going at parties.
Yeah.
have explained them all, but
I know it.
Why did Matt play a clip of someone saying Kanye's going to save the Jews? Well, it's actually pretty funny. Watch this Tim Pool clip.
That guy was weird tonight at dinner, wasn't he? I mean, I get it. He likes these sound drops, but it's really weird.
I'm doing my slide whistle.
Just a reminder, it is your support that makes this show possible, folks. You can help this show survive and thrive by becoming a member. Go to jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you not only get the free show free of commercials, you also get the fun half. And you can IM the show during the fun half with our app at majorityapp.com. The app is free. Your ability to IM us is a member feature. Now, of course, you can get a lot of other things on the app. You should check that out. Check out the links. Support our sponsors like justcoffee.coop, Fair Trade Coffee, Tea, or Chocolate, Full Co-op, employee-owned. Support farms in Chiapas and all around the world. Use the coupon code MAJORITY to get 10% off. Mm. So check that out. And don't forget, don't forget our merch. shop.majorityreportradio.com and the AM Quickie, amquickie.com. Get an email summary of the news in your mailbox, your email box every day. Emma, what's happening in the world of sports?
Bradley and I spoke about Derek Carr going to New Orleans, the NFL Combine, my skepticism over supposed point guard quarterback trend, and talked a bit about the Knicks winning 9 straight. NHL trade deadline. The Arizona Coyotes are a money laundering organization pretending to be a professional sports team. So check that out, youtube.com/ESPN show.
Matt, Lek Media.
Tonight, talking to Thomas Kennedy about the deep state DeSantis and his blogger registration bill and the different other measures he's taken to control the discourse down in Florida, as well as look at Charles Murray's talking about the sun people and the ice people again. So we're going to review a article written by Christopher Hitchens in The Nation from 1994 that basically is the last thing that needed to be said about Charles Murray. So patreon.com/leftreckoning to access our postgame tonight.
See you in the fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Are you ready?
Oh, yeah! Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, back.
Just as delicious as you could imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, back, back. Back.
Just wanna degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it to my throat.
Alpha males are back, 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 back.
Snowflake says what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman.
And the alpha males are back, back.
Oh no, Sam Cedar, what a fucking nightmare.
Yeah, or a couple of them, just put them in rotation.
DJ Dinner.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough for the break.
That's fucking nonsense.
See, white people doing drugs that look worse than normal white people, and all white people look disgusting.
And the alpha males,
psych. Fuck them. Fuck them.
Snowflake says what?
What?
Snowflake says what?
A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank. Okay. I'm making stupid money. Hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank.
All lives matter.
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back.
back. And the Africans are black, 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 black African. And the alpha males are black, 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 black. And the Africans are back, 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 back.
When you see Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keeping it 100. Can't knock the hustle. Come on. Fuck them. Fuck them. Things I do for the bigger game plan. By the way, it's my birthday.
My birthday.
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy.
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are black, black. Africans are back, back.
Come on. To pay the price of blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy.